This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. To lay down a primer ahead of our interview with Forestry Minister Ravi Parmar, in an earlier story published by our Due North newsroom, we reported on the partnership established by the Saikas First Nation and the Municipal District of Vanderhoof to collaboratively manage forests and timber supply under their purview. While exploring the significance of that partnership and what it could mean for the region, we spoke with a regional MLA, John Rustad, and an industry participant, John A. Brink, for their perspectives, not only on the agreement, but the current state of the forestry industry here in northern BC. In those conversations and through further research, the concept of area-based forestry management was brought up. Area-based forestry management differs from the volume-based forestry management, which is currently practiced by the province of BC when it comes to managing forests. This method ultimately influences or determines forest tenureships, timber supply areas, methods of taxation, and so on. It's a lot to consider. For now, we'll break down what area-based and volume-based management is, starting with volume-based management. Okay. In volume-based management, a company is granted the right to harvest a specific quantity or percentage of wood within a broader geographic region where the volume of available timber has been assessed, such as, say, the Prince George Timber Supply Area, or TSA. And in that TSA, multiple operators or companies may have licenses or tenures that permit them to work and extract raw forest materials in that area, measured in cubic meters. On a higher level, the volume of available harvest in the province is measured in cubic meters, assessed by the province's chief forester, who is hired on as a nonpartisan public servant, and they decide, based on the information that is presented to them, how many cubic meters of timber and/or wood fiber can be extracted from each management unit and the province overall. The number is known as the annual allowable cut, or the AAC. As of information updated on July 2nd, 2026, the total provincial annual allowable cut, or AAC, is 44,372,144 cubic meters. As mentioned in an earlier story, a standard Super B train truckload carries between 40 and 60 cubic meters. If we assume every Super B train is hauling 60 cubic meters, that amounts to 739,535.7 truckloads. So that's volume. Area-based management now will be a quicker explanation, because it's not practiced as extensively, at least for now. Area-based management grants a company exclusive harvesting and long-term stewardship rights over a specific, geographically defined tract of land, such as a tree farm license. And there are many, many tree farm licenses throughout the province of British Columbia, and the province provides a handy little map, which I'll provide a link to in this story's write-up. It's color-coded. The 1945 Sloan Commission report, cited in an earlier news story, led to a number of regulations which ultimately led to forest management licenses. A number of these forest management licenses evolved into what we now call tree farm licenses, which are, by the way, a subtype of tenureship, were issued back then, in the 40s. So this idea is not necessarily new by any means. As mentioned before, under a tree farm license, the holder gets to have exclusive rights to harvest timber and manage and conserve forest resources within a defined area of land. Criticisms leveled at this system tend to include the argument that if an irresponsible entity somehow attains a license, the goal of sustainable forest practices may not be achieved. But exclusive harvesting rights does not necessarily mean a license holder can do just whatever they want. They too, for example, have the responsibility to replant and reforest harvested areas. But so do tenureship holders under the volume-based management system. And that hasn't necessarily solved every problem when it comes to timber supply or forest ecology. Still confused after this lengthy and frankly not very stimulating explanation? You're not alone. And if you really dislike the way forestry management is currently practiced, you're also not alone. After multiple conversations, we weren't able to find anybody ready to celebrate the way things are currently done. Change is being called for from multiple levels. As the debate over which system is better than the other, or if something completely different altogether is needed, carries on, we were able to secure an interview with British Columbia's Forestry Minister Ravi Parmar over the phone before he hopped onto a plane to get to another appointment, and ask him whether he felt the agreement between Sika's First Nation and the Municipal District of Vanderhoof is approaching this concept of area-based forestry management, which does not focus so much on the amount of volume extracted from the area, but could, depending on how it's done, alternatively focus on the quality and productivity of the area itself. We take you now to our conversation with Forestry Minister Ravi Parmar.
What Sika's Nation and Vanderhoof District have proposed and are moving forward with, I'm curious if, in your view, is something that aligns with your vision of what area-based forestry management would look like. That sounds like something that approaches that area-based method of forestry management. Is that your assessment? Would you agree with that? Or is it something that doesn't quite line up with what you were thinking?
Well, look, I've followed at a fairly high level what Sika is in the District of Vanderhoof have announced in the form of their partnership. I'm certainly intrigued, excited about the opportunity for those communities to work together. I certainly know that Sika has faced its own challenges with forestry, but I know, as has Vanderhoof, but I certainly have a lot of faith in the leadership of Vanderhoof Mayor and Council. They are absolutely energized at tackling the challenges before them, and so certainly support their desires. I probably wasn't as clear as I should have been on the John Brink podcast. I don't think we should just switch from volume-based to area-based management. I think we must transition from volume to area-based management. I don't believe volume-based will help support the future of the sector. And in fact, I think it is a detriment to the success of this sector and is leading to the demise of this sector. And so I am excited about the opportunity to work with any nation. We do face challenges with many nations in that area, in particular the Carrier-Sicani, which I believe Sika's is members of them. Those are nations that have volume-based tenures but have not been moving fiber. And I'm certainly frustrated with a number of them in regards to that. But I'm certainly willing to work with nations, with communities, to be able to ensure that we can move towards a transition from volume-based to area-based management that I think is going to serve the interests of all British Columbians, and particularly a region that has faced considerable challenges and will continue to face considerable challenges in the weeks ahead.
I have 1,000 questions when it comes to a possible transition between volume-based to area-based management. And one of the challenges potentially ahead with that is current tenureship holders. Well, I would assume then that they would have to let go of their tenureship so that to make way for the rearrangement of things. And I don't know how much resistance would be felt there, and I don't believe that the Ministry of Forest revokes tenureships all that often, but it seems like something that would have to take place in order for that new system to come in and happen. Is that right? Like, is that an accurate assessment?
That's a really good way of putting it. I would say that the tenure system in British Columbia is complicated, and there's a lot of feelings about it. And so I'm of the mind that right now I don't believe the entirety of our tenure system is serving the interests of all British Columbians in terms of the multiple values that we're managing for in forestry. It is complicated. I have residents and individuals and workers who say to me, if a company decides to curtail or close its mill, they should lose access to their tenure. That's not how the laws operate. And so if government wants to take that tenure back, then it certainly has to pay for it. And so we have talked about tenure reform in the past. I guess what my message maybe would differ from my predecessors on this is I want to ensure this tenure is working for British Columbians. I want to ensure that we have a working forest that can last a generation. And that means managing for timber harvesting values, but also other values as well. And so with that in mind, what are some things that we're looking at? One of the best decisions that my government made was actually bringing in a public interest test when it comes to tenure that's traded. For example, prior to 2021, you could trade tenure amongst companies or even First Nations like hockey cards. Now it goes through a public interest test, and it comes to me to perform that public interest test and ensure that it is in the interests of British Columbians as this tenure is transferred. I've certainly had a number of tenure transfers in my time as Minister of Forest where I've had the honor of being able to perform that test. And I think there are opportunities. I think, as you will have seen in recent announcements in the North, where there has been considerable amounts of undercut. As an example from Canfor, I've awarded that to a group of local nations who've made a commitment towards exploring the construction of a new mill in Houston. So I'm certainly engaged in those types of conversations. And from a provincial perspective, my number one priority is to build a working force that can ensure that it can align with the values of all British Columbians. And certainly I'm mindful of the fact that tenure reform will be a part of that conversation.
When we look at District of Vanderhoof, their community forest, various research institutions have research forests, and with the collaboration of Vanderhoof and Sykes Nation, do you think that, you know, as different and unique as it is, do you think that that arrangement might become more common in the future as people organize to manage their local forest together in ways that benefit the local communities as much as possible, basically?
Absolutely. It should be. From my perspective, it's an expectation.
You probably can't divulge this because the announcement is an announcement, right? Is there any details you can give us ahead of your Monday to Wednesday trip in Prince George?
Sure, yeah, happy to. Monday I'll be in Prince George. I look forward to the opportunity to be able to meet with Mayor and Council. Look forward to the opportunity to be able to engage with Unifor workers who received devastating news just a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago with regards to the closure of the Northwood facility. It's really important that I make time to be able to engage with those workers on the front line of the challenges facing our forestry sector. The priority of this visit is going to be engaging with all of the medium-sized companies that make up the forestry sector in Prince George proper and the surrounding region. And then on Wednesday, I look forward to providing an update on some of the steps that we're taking, actually very timely given the conversation we just had, to see how BC timber sales can play a role in that transition from volume-based to area-based management. So,
just a quick FYI. BC Timber Sales is a government agency that basically acts as an auction house for some of BC's Crown Land Forest, amounting to roughly 20% of the province's total allowable annual cut, or AAC, which as of September 2026, the total is approximately 60 million cubic meters. Interested parties can bid through platforms like BC Bid, where individuals or entities can also bid on government contracts. Things like that.
So that's maybe just a bit of a scoop in terms of what my week hopefully will look like, obviously barring any challenges we may face with wildfires later this week.
Lots to do. Great. Certainly, I know people in Prince George are looking forward to some government involvement announcements and some reassurance and so on. Anyway.
Indeed. Well, we are just hours away from 50% additional tariffs on our wood products too. So a lot can change for sure.
And after this recording, unfortunately, a lot did change. This time, it wasn't wildfires that disrupted the schedules, but instead, Mr. Parmar's plans to visit Prince George Clairvaux-Tenay took a back seat to a quickly assembled federal-provincial tariff response meeting on August 27th, 2026. That meeting followed the United States government's announcement to implement 50% tariffs on a broad range of Canadian products on August 22nd, 2026. Since then, for example, on September 8th, further 50% tariffs were announced on a further range of products. In response to this trade disruption, PacificCan, or Pacific Economic Development Canada, answerable to Federal Minister Gregor Robinson, announced business relief funding through the Regional Tariff Response Initiative, where businesses can receive up to $2 million to help manage cash flow problems and cover costs caused by tariffs, and also potentially access up to $1 million for projects to adapt their operations and develop new products or services in response to the tariffs. The Forestry Minister and Premier David Eby reportedly have plans to meet soon with 15 signatories of a letter sent on behalf of organizations representing workers, manufacturers, contractors, communities, and businesses across BC's forest sector. Signatories such as BC Wood Council, the Truck Loggers Association, COFI, that's BC Council of Forest Industries, Woodlots BC, United Steelworkers, and several more. We'll see if that call to action and or initiatives related to local regional pulp mill closures and curtailments, such as efforts to attempt to bring back the Bridging for Retirement program, discontinued February 2025, to help forestry workers who've lost their jobs, results in any announcements that merit a visit to Prince George Clairvaux-Tenay. We'll keep our ear to the ground. back to area-based forestry management systems.
So a lot can change for sure.
Certainly. It's easy to get thrown into a tizzy there.
Indeed, indeed.
Reading up on the PFAC, the Provincial Forestry Advisory Council's take on area-based management and so on, one of the things it said was quite important if such a system were to come in place is who has the tenures and so on. For example, if a multinational corporation, whatever, that has participated in, say, the exploitation of a forest and just managed it very poorly, ends up taking over one of these tenureships, it's probably going to result in the same type of thing. And I'm kind of wondering if there's the level of quality control or assessment or so on that goes into who can actually get one of these tenureships. Do they have a track record of like, oh, this guy, oh, the report card from, you know, your past management track record hasn't been so hot, so you get to follow the back of the line while the rest of the people are applying for a tenureship or stuff like that. Maybe too early to say because the thing isn't.
Well, I think it's an excellent question, Ian. And I think your characterization of it is spot on. And I guess that's what I mean when I refer to the public interest test and what we need to talk about in relation to tenure reform is, you know, are the operators of the tenure meeting the interests of British Columbians? And I think if they are, whether they're a multinational company or international company or a local First Nations or a community forest, at the end of the day, as long as they're meeting the interests of British Columbians, they're investing in British Columbia, creating jobs, looking after the land, ensuring that our forests remain healthy, participating in wildfire resilience, then I think there's an opportunity for many different facets of organizations to be able to participate in forestry here in British Columbia. At the end of the day, we know that we have some challenges with our sector in terms of investment. I want to see more investment. And, you know, even though we are seeing a company like Canfor pull out, they still have invested a lot of money here in British Columbia. I think they've invested close to $1 billion just in the last few years. But we also have companies like Carrier that are continuing to invest in British Columbia. We have Dunkley. We have Gorman Brothers. There's so many that are doing this without making much fanfare as well. So I'm happy to have conversations with anyone and everyone who is interested in investing in British Columbia. And I think the framework that we're building towards a working forest that can last a generation will allow us to be able to entertain many investors who want to help build and restore confidence in our forest sector. And most importantly, in my mind, move it away from boom and bust to stability and certainty.
Well, thanks for having a conversation with me.
I'll interrupt again for a quick update. After the aforementioned July 28th episode of John A. Brink's On the Brink podcast, where Ravi Parmar indicated a desire to move to area-based forestry management from volume-based, and just a day before our conversation with Ravi Parmar on August 18th, unbeknownst to me, otherwise I would have had some more specific questions, Taiyi journalist Ben Parfit published an article titled BC is quietly planning to split forest lands into three used zones. And while the article got into the ups, downs, pros, and cons, on August 27th, the Ministry of Forest released a statement titled Taking the Next Step to Modernize BC Forest Management, where three zone types are proposed, being a working forest zone, a multi-use zone, and a conservation and protection zone. While we hope to explore this more in a follow-up story, this proposed three-zone management system does correspond with area-based management practices. While a zoning approach had been discussed by professionals and academics roughly 30 years ago, this current shift is notable. So far, though, early criticisms of the arrangement can be referenced from Grand Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, who lamented a lack of consultation. Presumably, efforts of consultation will take place before wide implementation, but the update has arrived suddenly, and updates can be found on the BC government's Working Forest Landscape Model webpage. Another early criticism offered by local advocacy group Conservation North suggests that the descriptions defining these zones are not specific enough, potentially leading to exploitative interpretations. CFR Radio intends to follow up for details. We now take you back to our final question for Forestry Minister Ravi Parmar.
I've got to ask, have you ever chopped down a big tree yourself?
Probably not as big of a tree as people would expect me to, but I am from coastal BC, so I've chopped down a few trees in my life.
How did it feel? What's that feeling like when you harvest a tree?
That's an interesting question. I would say that's not a question I've been asked before. I would say at the time I was more worried about it falling on a garden shed at the time when I first, I would say, chopped a tree down when I was in my teen years. I think trees are beautiful things. They provide a resource to our province, and I'm very grateful for the biodiversity and ecology that allows us to be able to grow the world's best trees, to be able to provide the world's best wood products. Sorry, that was probably a very political answer. You caught me off guard on that one.
Yeah, but I could definitely relate to the garden shed protection as well. That's
Absolutely. I would say that was the first time I truly cut down a big tree, was that we had a windstorm and it created a mess.
It really makes your palms pretty sweaty when you're in the moment.
It does, absolutely. Very nice meeting you over the phone. I look forward to meeting you in person.
Absolutely. I hope you have a good flight.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.